United States Bible, as we consider the matters we've been looking all week, evening, in regard to the matter of godliness. And in that vein, we've been able to deal with what godliness is, what it's not. Godliness is basically, if we break it down to a simple concept, it's basically the appropriate attitude toward that which deserves reverence, which means that God has a right to rule in our life. And when we get to a point, or if we do get to a point, where we identify and we say that, well, I know what it says, but then we have just moved out of a state of godliness into that of ungodliness, because we're not allowing God to rule in our life in some area of which folks have a propensity to draw to. And so we're looking in regard to the matter of godliness. We have a lot of ungodliness going on within the world within which we live. Have a lot of problems even with the children in the schools, with what's going on in the workplace, and there's a great deal of ungodliness that just seems to just start a snowball, and it will infiltrate every aspect of our life. And therefore, we need to know what it is in reference to that, of how it's carried out, the actions that are involved in godliness, and also that of ungodliness. Tonight, I want to deal with the question that if you choose to live ungodly, there's some things that we need to understand and to know in reference to it, because we understand the devastating results of ungodliness is seen within society, but sometimes it gets into an area of people don't consider it to be ungodly with what they're doing, because they have justified within their own minds that what they're doing is right, or at least if God doesn't care one way or the other. And Israel had that, and had that concept that they didn't believe that God even cared. The deist does not. They believe in God, but doesn't believe that God interacts with the creation, that God just wound up the world and turned it loose, and then it'll do whatever it does. And so there's a lot of doctrines that deal with the matter that allows individuals to be ungodly and still believe themselves to be morally right and ethically right. And so we want to consider what the Word of God has to say. And that's what we're coming here with, is simply of what does the Lord tell us in these particular matters. So what we're going to do tonight, I'm going to ask the question, if you want to live ungodly, there's some things that you need to remember. One of them is that the judgment of God has been established. It's already in the case of what God has provided. In the writing of the Roman letter, Romans chapter 1 and verse 18, we find where the Lord dealt with through the Apostle Paul, of where you have Romans chapter 1, where he deals with the Gentiles and their sins. You have Romans chapter 2, where he deals with the Jews and their transgressions. And then in chapter 3, he says that all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. And so he covers all of the bases. And throughout this, we find that there is identifications in regards to what the wrath of God will bring itself to do in bringing man into judgment. In Romans chapter 1, verse 18, when we deal with this wrath of God, where the wrath of God has been revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hinder the truth in unrighteousness. So we find that this ungodliness is that which God is going to bring a judgment on. Now, this wrath is a judicial wrath. This is not the anger wrath that individuals may have. This is judicial. We have, in regard to our own society, we have judges that they will execute a wrath because it's judicial. This is what is the consequences of whatever the actions may be. So it's not one of what man might consider, because the wrath of man does not work the righteousness of God. And so when God has a wrath, it's a wrath that is judicial. This is what is right. And so in verse 18, he identified that the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hinder the truth in unrighteousness, because that which is known of God is manifest in them, for God manifested it unto them. He showed them. When you find something is manifested, it's something you can see. It's tangible, if you will, to the mind and the eyes. He said, for the invisible things of him, since the creation of the world, are clearly seen, being perceived through the things that are made, even his everlasting power and divinity, that they may be without excuse. You cannot look at this creation and walk away from it thinking that it just happened by accident, by some little amoeba, that whoever knows where the amoeba came from, you know, and there's just so many aspects of it that they're just without excuse. Without excuse. Because that, knowing God, they know something. God has implanted in us, if you will, innate laws of right and wrong. And no matter where you go in the world, there's going to be laws that are pretty consistent with that of the Ten Commandments, if you consider them. And so it's an innate. And that's where the conscience comes in, as Paul identified in the Roman letter as well, that men will do that within the conscience, and they're able to exercise their conscience in the Gentiles did in verse 14, for when the Gentiles that have not the law do by nature the things of the law, these not having the law are law unto themselves, in that they show the work of the law written in their heart, their conscience bearing witness therewith, and their thoughts one with another accusing or else excusing. Now, the conscience is a guide, but it is not the ultimate guide, because we don't know everything that God would have us to know, and so we can't make a judgment on all things. But we do make a judgment on certain things in life. They're innate. Sometimes we talk about the gospel and the gospel, the good news, because you've heard, may have heard someone say, "Well, if you're not, if you don't obey the gospel, you're lost." No, you're lost already. That's the bad news. The gospel is the good news of here's what God has provided, that we can be saved, that we can have salvation that has separated us from our God, and therefore we're dead. Death is separation in the physical realm, separation of the body and the spirit. Spiritual realm is separation from the good favor of God, of a judgment that must come upon us, which is identified in verse 18 of our text. But he said these individuals in verse 21, that because knowing God, they glorified him not as God, neither gave thanks, but became vain in their reasoning, and their senseless heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools, changed the glory of the incorruptible God for the likeness of an image of corruptible man, and of birds, and of four-footed beasts, and creeping things. Wherefore God gave them up in the lust of their heart unto uncleanness, that their body should be dishonored among themselves, for that they exchanged the truth of God for a lie, and worshipped and served the creature rather than the Creator. Atheism falls into that category, that they worship themselves. They worship the creature rather than that of the Creator. Those that go by nature, then that's what they appeal to, is the nature aspect of it. And we find that he said that they exchanged the truth of God for a lie and worshiped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. For this cause, God gave them up unto vile passions, for their women changed the natural use into that which is against nature, and likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust and one toward another, men with men, working unseemliness, and receiving in themselves that recompense of their error which was due. And even as they refused to have God in their knowledge, and that's what they did, they refused to have God in their knowledge, God gave them up unto a reprobate mind, and a reprobate is one that's not standing the test. They have not reached or achieved that which they were, for which they were created. They are reprobate in mind to do those things which are not fitting, being filled with all unrighteousness, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, malignity, whisperers, backbiters, hateful to God, insolent, haughty, boastful, inventor of evil things, disobedient to parents, without understanding, covenant breakers, without natural affection, unmerciful, who knowing the ordinance of God, that they that practice such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but also consent with them that practice them. Now we know what it is within the laws of our land for those who will consent to that of evil work. They're part of it. They consent to it. They say that it's okay. It's not for me. But they do whatever they want to, and they consent to it. And this is descriptive of a lot of what's going on in our society now. It went on in the society of Rome. It's gone on in other societies throughout the history of mankind. It's not new to us, but it is that which we're dealing with within our various lives. And all of this is something that the child of God has a responsibility to speak up about it and not consent by virtue of just being silent in regard to that. We've been dealing with the prophets in the morning classes and see how those prophets, their responsibility was to speak the word of God, not to add to it, not to take away from it, just like we have in our lives. We're not prophets, nor the sons of the prophets. We didn't go to the prophet schools and all of that that they were involved in, but we have the same responsibility to uphold the gospel of Jesus Christ when we're faced with those particular events. And so we find that the Lord is against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men. And so that judgment has been established. In the writing of the Ephesian letter, in Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 6, the warning was given in regard to men that will deceive. And Paul said, "Let no man deceive you with empty words. For because of these things cometh the wrath of God upon the sons of disobedience. Be not ye therefore partakers with them, for ye were once darkness, but now are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light." Verse 10, "proving what is well-pleasing unto the Lord, and have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but" what? "Ignore it, let it go, be silent," he said, "but rather even reprove them. For the things which are done by them in secret, it is a shame even to speak of." And so we find the Lord has established this point in regard to a judgment. We know the wrath of God is going to come upon the world because he tells us that that's what's going to be the case. Not because we just think it, but because the Lord has instructed us in that regard. And therefore we find in the Corinthian letter, in 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 10, of where we're all going to give an account for the deeds that are done in the body, whether they be good or whether they be evil, because we will stand before the judgment seat of Christ, that each one may receive the things done in the body according to what he has done. And so the Lord has identified and has given us ample instruction that we will indeed give an account for the deeds that are done in the body. All right, now when we look at this on the grand scale, we're going to look at this ungodliness as it applies to the grand scale within the world within which we live, and most specifically within the nation within which we live. We find that on a grand scale, ungodliness will destroy nations. In the writing of Peter, 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 4, we find the events that the Lord had identified when he took and the flood that was upon the earth. But let's go back to verse 4, 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 4, when he said, "For if God spared not angels when they sinned, but cast them down to hell and committed them to pits of darkness to be reserved unto judgment, and spared not the ancient world, but preserved Noah with seven others, a preacher of righteousness, when he brought a flood upon the world of the ungodly." And so there's the matter of that ungodliness. He brought this flood upon the world of the ungodly, and turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemned them with an overthrow, having made them an example unto those that should live ungodly. And so this matter with what they were involved in and the debaucheries that Sodom and Gomorrah was involved in, that Jude deals with, that God said that's ungodliness. And he brought those nations down. He destroyed those nations. He destroyed the world and saved only that of Noah and his family. The question that you have tonight is, do you have the faith that would save the world? Will your faith, like Noah, would it be one that would save the world or just take it away with the rest of it? God found favor with Noah, and therefore he preserved Noah and his family. And we're a result of that. That the earth is still here today. And so we find that we could ask that question, do I have the faith of Noah to do what the Lord would have me to do? So God showed that with the nation that he will destroy them. We find that within Jeremiah chapter 22. Jeremiah dealt with the children of Israel right before they were taken into the Babylonian captivity while they were developing. And Jeremiah told them about the destruction that was going to come upon them even before Nebuchadnezzar reared his head to bring about his judgment upon them for their transgressions. And therefore, in Jeremiah chapter 22, beginning in verse 1, we find that he said, thus said Jehovah, go down to the house of the king of Judah and speak there this word and say, hear the word of Jehovah, O king of Judah, that sitteth upon the throne of David, thou and thy servants and thy people that enter in by these gates. Thus saith Jehovah, execute justice and righteousness and deliver him that is robbed out of the hand of the oppressor, and do no wrong, do no violence to the sojourner, the fatherless, nor the widow, neither shed innocent blood in this place. For if ye do this thing, indeed, then shall there enter in by the gates of this house kings sitting on the throne of David, riding in chariots and on horses, he and his servants and his people. Right? Jerusalem is going to flourish if you will do that, if you will exercise justice in your life, in the king's life, and make sure that you're doing what the Lord would have you to do. Jerusalem was going to flourish. But if you will not hear these words, I swear by myself, saith Jehovah, that this house shall become desolate. For thus saith Jehovah concerning the house of the king of Judah, thou art Gilead unto me and the head of Lebanon. Now that those were flourishing places. They were beautiful. And the Lord says, that's what you are to me. Yet surely, if you don't do these things that I tell you to do, you don't stand up for justice against those that are oppressed, if you don't do that, I will make thee a wilderness and cities which are not inhabited. And I will prepare destroyers against thee, every one with his weapons. And they shall cut down thy choice cedars and cast them into the fire. And many nations, now here's what's going to happen. This is what, because Nebuchadnezzar is going to come in. He is the arm of God, the hammer of God against these nations because of their transgressions. And he says, and many nations shall pass by this city. They're going to go by Jerusalem, of this wondrous city that is beautiful, that has the temple of God that is there. And they're going to pass by this city, and they shall say every man to his neighbor, wherefore has Jehovah done thus unto this great city? Why did he do this to this great city? Then they shall answer, because they forsook the covenant of Jehovah their God and worshiped other gods and served them. They knew exactly why God had destroyed Jerusalem. And so on the big scale of things, that unrighteousness and ungodliness will destroy nations. We find, therefore, in Leviticus chapter 18, you recall that when the children of Israel came out of the Egyptian bondage, that they were going to inhabit a promise that was given to Abraham, that they would inhabit the land of Canaan. Now, sometime you may be talking to someone and they'll talk about that and say, well, God, he just told them to go in and destroy all the people that were there so they'd have a place to live. That'd be a pretty good deal, wouldn't it? But God used Nebuchadnezzar against Jerusalem, God used Israel against the Canaanites for their transgressions. And therefore, in Leviticus 18 and verse 24, we find of where he sets forth this, he has identified the impurities of life that were forbidden to the children of Israel. And these are deal with actually sexual relations that they were abusing and what they were involved in the abuse that they were exercising in their life. And therefore, he said in verse 24, defile not ye yourselves in any of these things, for in all these the nations are defiled which I cast out from before you. That's why they're being cast out. You recall that when the Lord told Abraham that I'm going to give you this land, that I'm going to give you the seed that be innumerable, I'm going to give you the land of Canaan, he said, oh, by the way, it's going to be four generations. We're going to have 400 years before that happens. Until the sins of the Amorites became full. No hope for them. No hope. It wasn't going to get any better. And it was then that they were destroyed. Now he said, concerning the land that was defiled, therefore I do visit the iniquity thereof upon it, and the land vomiteth out her inhabitants. So what does he tell Israel? Ye therefore shall keep my statutes and mine ordinances, and shall not do any of these abominations, neither the homeborn nor the stranger that sojourneth among you. For all these abominations have the men of the land done that were before you, and the land is defiled. That the land vomit not you out also when ye defile it, as it vomited out the nation that was before you. He said, if you do what they did, the same thing is going to happen to you that happened to them. Well, it happened to them. So what does that tell us? They did exactly what those other nations had done. And so the Lord, on the grand scale, he will destroy these nations. But we know from the writing of Proverbs, in Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 34, of where righteousness exalteth a nation. It'll exalt it. We know that within our study on the prophets, with Jehoshaphat, and he went forth and he sent teaching priests throughout the land to instruct them and to teach them the word of God that the other nations feared. They were in fear. They didn't make war with Judah because they knew that God would protect them. And we find that in reference to that, God has shown that he will destroy nations for their iniquities and their abominations. And that ought to concern us a great deal within the world within which we live. On this concise scale, ungodliness will destroy families. We see in regard to this in the writing of 1 Timothy, in 1 Timothy chapter 1, that the Apostle Paul tells Timothy of what he's going to have to deal with. He tells us the benefit of the law, if you will, if it is used lawfully. In 1 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 8, but we know that the law is good if a man use it lawfully, as knowing this, that law is not made for a righteous man, but for the lawless and unruly. There's no law reference to righteousness. Okay? You're doing right. There's no law. The law was given to suppress the evil that the people were involved in. For the unruly, those are people that will not be ruled. You'll find throughout your life, in reference to even the proclamation of the gospel, there's people that will not be ruled. Matter of fact, I talked to a gentleman the other day. I have a custom of going out, especially Sunday morning, and I'll meet with these guys, and I'll encourage them to come to services. And I asked the fellow, I said, what are you going to do today? And he said, well, I don't know. The rain just kind of messed up my plans. And I said, well, come on and go with me. And he said, you know, I don't like being told what to do. Okay. And that's the attitude a lot of people have. We don't like to be told what to do. And so we find that that's what's going on. The unruly, they will not be ruled. You'll also find people that are unteachable. You can't teach them. They will not receive any teaching within their life. And so that's the attitude, that's the mind. We talked last night about having a transforming of the mind, the renewing of the mind, that we might transform ourselves into what the Lord would have us to be. All right, so he said in verse 10, for fornicators, abusers of themselves with men, for men stealers, for liars, for false swearers, if there be any other thing contrary to the sound doctrine, according to the gospel and the glory of the blessed God, which was committed to my trust, of that of the Apostle Paul. And so he identified that here is a generation, here is a nation, if you will, in reference to different families where murders of fathers and mothers. unfathomable, but it happens. And we've had it even within our own time references to that. We also find on a smaller scale that in 1 Timothy chapter 5, that one that you have in verse 4 that talks about the responsibility that if any widow has children or grandchildren, let them learn first, or let the children and grandchildren learn first to show piety. Piety is worship. Worth-ship. Their worth. Here's what they are worth. Let them show the worth of their parents, of their family, and to requite their parents. Pay them back. When you couldn't take care of yourself, they took care of you, they fed you, they clothed you, and you owe them something. And he said in reference to it that this is acceptable in the sight of God. Well, what about those that do not do so? Verse 8. But if any provideth not for his own, and especially his own household, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. King James says worse than an infidel. And so we find that we have responsibilities, and ungodliness will destroy families. In the writing of 2 Samuel chapter 1 and verse 13. I select this one because it deals with the matter of the transgression that went on within a family. David had several wives. We're familiar with that, and in regard to it, we have three individuals involved here. One of them was that of the older one, of Ammon, of the older brother. And then you have Tamar, who was a sister. And then you have Absalom. Now, Absalom and Tamar, they had the same mother and same father. All right? Now, what we find that in 2 Samuel chapter 13, when Amnon... Tamar was his half-brother, all right? And it came to pass after this that Absalom, the son of David, had a fair sister whose name was Tamar. And Amnon, the son of David, loved her. And Amnon was so vexed, he was so distressed, that he fell sick because of his sister Tamar, for she was a virgin. And it seemed hard to Amnon to do anything unto her. But Amnon had a friend. Now this is the kind of friend you don't want. He had a friend whose name was Jonadab, the son of Shimeah, David's brother. And Jonadab was a very subtle man. He was shrewd. He was crafty. He was cunning in what he did. And so he says unto his friend, he says unto Amnon, he said, "Why, O son of the king, art thou thus lean?" Okay, he was weak. He wouldn't eat. That his passion for her was of such a degree. Wilt thou not tell me? And Amnon said unto him, "I love Tamar, my brother Absalom's sister." And Jonadab said unto him, "Lay thee down on thy bed. And feign thyself sick. And when thy father cometh to see thee, say unto him, Let my sister Tamar come, I pray thee, and give me bread to eat. And dress the food in my sight, that I may see it, and eat from her hand." So Amnon lay down, and he feigned himself sick. And when the king was come to see him, Amnon said unto the king, "Let my sister Tamar come, I pray thee, and make me a couple of cakes in my sight, that I may eat from her hand." Then David sent home to Tamar, saying, "Go now to thy brother Amnon's house, and dress him food." So Tamar went to her brother Amnon's house, and he was laid down. And she took dough, and kneaded it, and made cakes in his sight, and did take the cakes. And she took the pan, and poured them out before him, but he refused to eat. And Amnon said, "Have all the men from me. Send them out. Get them out of the room." And they went out, every man from him. And Amnon said unto Tamar, "Bring the food into my chamber, that I may eat from thy hand." And Tamar took the cakes which she had made, and brought them into the chamber to Amnon her brother. And when she had brought them near unto him to eat, he took hold of her, and said unto her, "Come, lie with me, my sister." She answered him, "Nay, my brother, do not force me, for no such thing ought to be done in Israel. Do not thou this folly. And I, whether shall I carry my shame? And as for thee, wilt thou be as one of the fools in Israel? Now therefore I pray thee, speak unto the king, for he will not withhold me from thee. Howbeit he would not hearken unto her voice, and but being stronger than she, he forced her and lay with her." Now there's a lot of that going on even in our own society. These events happen in homes. So you look back at what the reason that the nations were vomited out of the land during the time of Israel when they were going into the land. This is the type of stuff that was happening. And we find that when Amnon, after the fact, Amnon hated her with exceeding great